Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. There was a time when you heard the term scientist that you only thought about men. Well, that time is long past. Women are continuing to step into the forefront of science careers. But who are these women? Well, tonight, during our Women Wednesday conversation, you will meet two of them, two fascinating black women. Dr. Maureen Robinson Stanton is a nuclear security fellow with the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. And Trishonda Moten is a senior aerospace engineer with NASA. Lines are open if you want to talk to these women at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Certainly you can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Ladies, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. It's an honor to have both of you on my program.
Sure. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let me give our listeners a bit of an idea of what your titles actually mean. Dr. Stanton, you've got this long title, Nuclear Security Fellow with the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. That is so CNN-esque.
It's very impressive.
What do you do?
Sure. So just for the record, my last name is Snowden. I'm a Stanton Nuclear Security Fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International
Thank
Peace.
Thank you so much.
Just for the record. So I'm a nuclear engineer by training. And what I do at the Carnegie Endowment is really think about kind of emerging nuclear security issues and threats that the U.S. and the international community will be facing. So a lot of us have heard about North Korea in the news, the current negotiations that are going on with the Trump administration and the Kim Jong-un administration. So I think a lot about whatever deal comes out of those negotiations, how would you verify them, right? We're trying to limit their nuclear program. We don't want them to have a robust nuclear weapons program. And my kind of research project is to think about how would you roll back a program like that. But, you know, nuclear threats writ large, if we're talking about U.S.-Russia, there's a lot of kind of rising tensions, U.S.-China on the nuclear security front. So I think about nuclear weapons, how can we reduce nuclear threats, and how can we make sure that we're not proliferating nuclear weapons kind of worldwide.
Sounds patriotic.
I do my best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, seriously, it really does sound like you're helping to not only make the United States safer, but the world.
I mean, that's the intention, and this has been a sentiment in the nuclear security field since its inception. So if you think about the Manhattan Project, it was scientists and engineers that thought this is not a weapon for war, right? Mm-hmm. Nuclear weapons should not be used in war fighting, and how do we limit their use and their proliferation, the spread of them throughout the nation? So that sentiment of safety and security has kind of been inherent in the field from its beginning.
And the Manhattan Project, obviously the first nuclear bombs made by the U.S. was a Fat Man and Little Boy.
Exactly. Yeah, 1945.
There you go. I wasn't there. But, Trishonda, you are a senior aerospace engineer. What do you do for a living now?
I work at NASA at the Goddard Space Flight Center. My title is mission systems engineer there, but I'm an aerospace engineer by training. What I do here at Goddard is I work as a mission system engineer to design mission. Well, we have mission concepts. We have programs that we establish, or projects that we establish based on scientific research and what our scientists would like to do. So some of the missions are for Earth orbiting, to look at the weather, for NOAA, to look at the behavior patterns of the weather, to look at climate change issues, and to understand what's going on with the Earth. But we also do deep space missions. We do interplanetary missions to Mars, to Venus, as you've heard about. And we also have heliophysics, which is looking at the sun. So my job as a mission systems engineer is to help the scientist coordinate a team of engineers of different disciplines. And we basically decide if it's a viable mission at the inception of the concept. And we also work to help them implement the mission. And so once it passes the proposal phase and it gets awarded, or it's chosen by NASA to be a mission that will go into space and do some type of surveillance or some type of, get some knowledge or collect some data, the spacecraft is developed mostly here at Goddard.
That's amazing. That is amazing to me. And Dr. Snowden, you were kind of nodding your head when you were listening. What were you thinking?
I mean, this idea of supporting missions, right? So our government has kind of irons in a lot of fires, and the STEM community, the technical community, often provides that foundational backing for them to figure out what the next best path forward is. So to Trishonda's point about, you know, providing that fundamental analysis and helping them, you know, problem solve, that's a lot of what we do in the think tank community. So the government, because of the way it's structured, people within the government are often very short staffed. They have very broad portfolios, and they don't have the time to kind of brainstorm about the future 5 and 10 years down the line. And what the think tank community does is we have that luxury. We have the luxury to ask those hard questions and come up with options so that when there is political will, or when the government is ready to make a move on something like climate change or on something like a nuclear security topic, there are options already on the table that have been thought through by really smart and intelligent people.
Well, I hope I don't have questions that are too hard for both of you, but I do plan on getting into your business just a little bit, just to find out a lot more about both of you. Of course, we are having a conversation with Black women scientists during our Women Wednesday conversation. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, I'll start with you, Trishonda. How did you get interested in where you are now? What was the little girl story for you?
Well, as a kid, I've always been interested in the stars. And I grew up in rural Alabama, a little town called Camden, about 38 miles southwest of Selma. I know everybody's heard of Selma. Not many have heard of Camden, my little community. But it's a rural community with a lot of open fields. And as a kid, we played. And at night, it got dark and we had to get home. But I like to stand outside on the porch and look at the stars. And so when I was in the sixth grade, I became really interested in Halley's Comet. It was returning and it was a big deal and it was in the news and I wanted to know all about it. So my mom, you know, bought books after I, you know, told her what I wanted, and I just really wanted to know about this stuff. She bought the books for me. It was going to be my science project that was coming up in March. So I was doing all this research, reading all about Halley's Comet, had the poster on the wall in my room. And as I was preparing for that, it was coming in February of 1986, and then the shuttle Challenger exploded in January of 86. So then that was the big news story. And it, of course, you know, a really big thing, because a shuttle had never exploded before. So I was really intrigued by that news and didn't really have a good understanding of what the science meant at, you know, at that age. But I started reading. We got Newsweek, we got the Time magazine, went to the library, started reading all these periodicals and magazines about what happened. And some friends and I, who used to study after school, got together and said, let's do our science project about the space shuttle and why it exploded. So that became our science project. We ended up winning Project of the Year at our local regional science fair after we won first place at the school. And it just became an interest of mine. So we were building space shuttles out of cardboard and, you know, doing balsa wood airplanes. I really just got into wanting to know all about aerospace and airplanes and things to do with rockets. So, you know, once I was a little bit older, we started doing rocket launches in the backyard and stuff like that at the park nearby. So it just became an interest of mine, and I pursued that. I was really good in math and science, so I sought some advice from my physics teachers in high school, was encouraged to go into this field as an undergraduate. So I went forward and studied physics.
You're at the University of Alabama, is that correct?
Yes, the University of Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Similar story for you, Dr. Snowden?
No, actually very different. With your story was very interesting. No, mine was very different. I didn't really discover my interest, let alone a passion for science, until very late. I say I'm a late bloomer in STEM. So I went through, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school with a really interesting relationship with math and science. I was very fearful of the material. I mean, I think a lot of that fear initially came from not understanding the process of learning and the fact that struggle is a key component in developing mastery, right? So as a young girl, I often looked at struggle as like a character flaw or a deficiency that I had. So instead of looking at math as something that you practice at and you gain aptitude as you go along, I thought either you're good or you're bad at math, because that's how adults talk about it, right? It's I'm good at math or I hate math, or, you know, so that was the kind of binary
choice. Your dad's good at math, me not so much, or your mom's good at math. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And we don't think about how children receive and internalize those messages. So for me, the framework was very binary. It was either you're good or you're bad, you're up or you're down. And it wasn't until 10th grade that I had a professor that kind of reframed that for me. She said, you know, you have a good mind. You can gain these concepts if you put your mind to it. So she worked with me and we went through office hours. And she was wonderful in the way that she used as many examples as you needed, right? So it wasn't just two or three examples. She would say it this way and then she would say it another way. So 10th grade was really where I kind of allowed myself to consider math as not being a traumatic thing. And then my father, actually, he's an attorney by training, and he had a family friend that was at Florida A&M at the time in the physics department. And they were just kind of catching up on, you know, the history of themselves coming from New Haven. And he said, you know, my daughter's taking physics right now. And she said, oh, my husband is a professor in the family physics department. You should bring your daughter up so she can do a college tour. And I did. And, you know, my dad, he said, you know, Marina, I'm an attorney. I don't know the first thing about numbers or equations, but I feel like this physics thing is a wave of the future, you know, so just try it as a major. And that was really what introduced me to it. But I really kind of took it on as an experiment. Like, I'll give it my best shot.
Well, there you go.
And if it doesn't work, I'll be a theater major, or I'll do something, you know, do something else. And next thing I knew, I looked up and I was a junior at Florida A&M and have been doing really well and done some internships at MIT, where I later did my PhD. So, you know, you just never know what's in front of you until you kind of open yourself up to the possibilities.
I want to drill down a little bit indeed it is, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. But first, I'm going to go to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is our Women Wednesday conversation. We are talking about black women at the forefront of science careers. Let's talk to Alexander, calling from Laurel. Alexander, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Real quick, I wanted to ask you, what's it like being black in the STEM field? I'm black, and I'm going to North Carolina A&T in the fall studying biological engineering, and I really wanted to find out what it's like being black and what the process was like for you personally. Thank you.
You know, great question. Shoshana, I'll start with you first. We'll have to take a break, but I'll let you start that part of the conversation.
For me, it was not always easy. I went to the University of Alabama, which was a predominantly white institution. And being at a majority institution, I, you know, found a lot of differences, because I grew up in a rural community where the schools were pretty well segregated, even in the 70s and 80s when I grew up, and the 90s. Going off to college, I saw something very different. I even had professors tell me that this isn't for you. Mm. This is not a good field for you. And I took that to mean, as a black woman, this is not what I'm supposed to do. And I was not happy about that. It was really sad for a while. And to some extent, it was a little bit defeating. I didn't do well in some of my classes at first. But I sought tutors. I talked to my mom. I called friends. She called friends. We found people to help me, you know, study differently and to really catch up. You know, I was the top of my class when I graduated high school, but going off to college, I wasn't. I was not able to compete with those kids who had other things at their disposal coming from different high schools throughout the country. So I had to really work hard and, you know, just realize that I'm put here for a purpose. And I asked God, if this is it, help me figure it out. And it worked out with a lot of hard work and a lot of prayer.
I want to talk a little bit more about that, too. But as I said, we need to take a break. Lines are open. As always, we are taking your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. Greg calling from Baltimore. We're going to talk to you after the break. And we have so much more to learn in this conversation, this Women Wednesday conversation, women on the cutting edge of science careers. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are in the midst of our Women Wednesday conversation, and we are talking to two black women scientists. My guests are Dr. Maureen Robinson-Snowden. She is a Stanton Nuclear Security Fellow with the Carnegie Endowment for Peace, and Trishonda Moten. She is a senior aerospace engineer with NASA right down the road here at the Robert Goddard Space Flight Center. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Trishonda, before the break, we were talking about challenges in your field, and certainly if you don't play football at the University of Alabama, you're really kind of low on the totem pole down there, you know?
Well, you know, we had a bumper sticker once that said number one in engineering and football. So we like to think that we were a great engineering school as well, but not everybody knows that.
But when you started your career, did you get any pushback related to gender or race? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Initially, I didn't. I had a very good group of mentors. They were, well, my first job was with a group of men. I was the only female in the company, other than one of the gentleman's daughters who was the business analyst, and she helped me a lot to understand the engineering world, and in Huntsville is where I started out, and Alabama. And it was really great to have the support from the guys, and they basically said, it's what you know in college, we're just going to use it. And I didn't feel like I could always apply things, but they helped me see how to do things, and I learned a lot on the job. So it was really great. And then when I had my second job, it was a summer internship that led to a permanent job with another company. And at the second company, I was paired with a group of women. We were all thermal analysts. And I was then pursuing my master's degree in aerospace engineering.
Let me stop you. What is a thermal analyst? I mean, for me, I'm thinking, boy, it's hot in here. Let me just turn down the thermostat. Is a thermal analyst?
We actually design thermostats for the shuttle. And when there was a shuttle at the time with the International Space Station, there's something called the glove box that's on the International Space Station. It was also part of the shuttle for experiments. And the astronauts, when they go up, they have to put their hands through these gloves and do the experiments for the scientists on the Earth who can't obviously go there because they're not trained astronauts. Experiments and the scientists and the astronauts go up and conduct the experiments. So we basically do the thermal analysis to make sure that these experiments are going to work in space. We simulate in a software the environment of space and microgravity, and basically determine how it's going to work, how it's expected to work for the scientists, and we set up testing and so forth. So as a thermal analyst, we did that, designing, you know, the thermal environment, the thermostats, making sure the room temperature is correct for the small glove box environment that's going to conduct the experiment. Sometimes they're growing crystals, sometimes they're doing, you know, just setting up things to test in that environment. And some of the things have been useful in generating, you know, tools and medication for fighting disease, so they get to test a lot of that in the microgravity environment that can't be tested here on Earth.
Dr. Snowden, did you ever face any adversity related to gender or race in the culture of your career choice?
You know, I think the interesting thing about being a black woman in STEM, the idea of an intersectional identity is often very difficult to kind of decouple or understand the motivation for the hardship, right? Like, am I having a hard time because I'm black, or am I having a hard time because I'm a woman, or is it a little bit of both, right? So, you know, I chose early on in my career not to do that mental acrobatics of trying to figure out why this person or institution has a problem with me, right? Like my job here is to get the grades, to do the work, to become the best researcher possible. But absolutely you have, you know, when you think about scientific institutions as a whole, they were not designed with us in mind. Right?
Why do you say that?
So, you know, if you take an institution like MIT or Harvard or Yale, you know, they were established in a very tumultuous time in our country. Right. This was, you know, 25, 30 years after the Civil War, when African-Americans still didn't have their full citizenship, right, their full rights. So we were still moving through this world with less than what we deserved as natural born citizens. So that mindset in some ways was a part of the foundation of the way that these institutions were established. And there are some universities that have direct ties to the institution of slavery, right?
Yes,
you think about a Georgetown.
Georgetown, for example.
Right?
So
that is what I mean when I say they didn't build these institutions with us in mind, although the institutions have done tremendous work in trying to right that initial wrong, right? Trying to provide a more inclusive environment and resources for marginalized and underrepresented communities to participate. But, I mean, yes, I had a professor one time tell me, you know, I was getting ready for a scientific presentation at a conference, and he said, "Oh, well, you know, Marina, don't worry about it. Nobody will be listening to you because you have on high heels." And I just remember thinking, okay, like, I'm going to leave that right there, and I'm going to focus on this talk, you know, because if I spend too much of my energy trying to focus on the comment, I'm taking time from focusing on my technical research, right? Mm-hmm. So there is a strategic decision and a strategic calculation that Black women and all women of color do on a daily basis about where am I going to kind of invest my energy. And for me, I've learned through the years, and it's taken a lot of maturity on my part. I definitely didn't have this perspective in the beginning, but that I'm not going to invest my energy in trying to understand your, you know, how you see me. And where you think I belong as a woman or as a Black person. That's not my issue. That's your issue, and I hope God works with you on that, right? My issue.
That's not my ministry, right?
So my issue is to deal with this nuclear engineering in front of me, right? This equation that I'm trying to solve. But like I said, it takes time to get there.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Greg, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, hi. I had actually a question and a comment, but Harold, you stole my thunder on the question, because that was the question I was going to ask about the challenges you faced in your profession. So I'll go straight to my comment, and that is, I just want to say I find both of your stories very compelling, and I'm very impressed with you both. And you two serve as prime examples of humble success, and I only wish my daughter were with me so she could hear somebody that looks just like her and see how you can attain that level of success. So keep on doing what you're doing. I'm very proud of both of you, and you make me very proud. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg. And Greg, by the way, as always, this conversation will be posted tonight after 9 o'clock on WHUR.com in the form of a podcast. So you will be able to listen to it along with your daughter and share in the experience. So just wanted to give you a heads up about that. We do that every single night on this program. But again, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jesse, calling from Quincy, Florida. Jesse, what's on your mind?
Hey, greetings, Mr. Fisher. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure you know where Quincy, Florida is.
I do. Like, yeah. That. Yeah. I've done a little TV reporting down in Quincy, but go right ahead. Yeah.
Nothing there, but I just had a question for the guests. What programs or activities are they involved in or trying to start to basically cultivate the next group of African-American girls who aspire to become what they are today?
That's a great question. I've been volunteering a lot in this area. And, you know, all my career, I've gone to schools to talk to kids. I've gone to different organizations to support their what's now become STEM programs. And I'm actually talking to some folks about starting up a STEM, you know, foundation or a group of kids a program for kids that we can sponsor. And we're always asking for other, you know, women, minorities, other people to come because it's important to go into the schools and show kids that we do it and what we look like and what we do and to talk to kids. So we're in high demand at NASA. We have a very good education coordinator, Leslie Garrison, who puts together programs for us to go into the schools as volunteers from NASA throughout the community. We go all over the DMV, even to Baltimore, and we've done a lot of things there. And I have a program that I'm going to be speaking at in the near future at an elementary school because sometimes STEM tends to focus on middle and high school students because they're at the minds where the minds are developing towards science and engineering. But we like to think that if you talk to kids at an early age, which is when I was kind of interested in this before even I was 12 years old, I was always interested in the stars and understanding that if you put something in front of them where they can appreciate and understand and learn what this means and what the science is about it, they're not as intimidated. They don't feel like it's something they can't do.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of organizations that are doing kind of the lion's share of the work of trying to increase representation in STEM. So you can think about organizations like the National Society of Black Engineers, the National Society of Black Physicists, the National Society of Hispanic Engineers and Physicists, also a new organization that's come on the scene, Women of Color Advancing Peace and Security. It was founded by one of the few black women ambassadors at the State Department that's trying to kind of infuse women of color's voices in both hard and soft security. So things like nuclear security, diplomacy, peace and conflict. Mm-hmm. So these are organizations that are focused not only on young women entering into the field, but also a less covered part of the retention issue, which is mid-career women, right? So once we get the women in the door and they've come into these institutions, what we see is that the pipeline is leaky, right? So you get in, but women of color are not staying for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And my suspicion is that a lot of the reason is the culture mm-hmm. of these institutions are not one that in which they can thrive. And we still need to do more research on that. But there are organizations that are interested in both sides of the diversity discussion, getting women and girls in the room, but also making sure that they stay and are able to thrive in the way that Trishonda has in her own career.
Let me ask, what advice would you give to the Jessies of Quincy, Florida, mm-hmm. who want to direct their daughters or their friends' daughters or other daughters in the family mm-hmm. who may feel that they don't have the support or guidance when they suspect that either their children have a particular talent, interest, or aptitude mm-hmm. for this?
I would suggest looking at some of the sororities and fraternities around the community, as well as if you're around where they have Jack and Jill mm-hmm. or any of these organizations, because I've done some STEM research and, I've done STEM program research, I'll say, to find programs for people in other communities outside of main towns. And there's usually Greek organizations, Greek letter organizations in the Panhellenic Council, like the Deltas, the Alphas, the AKAs, the Kappas, Omegas. They're all doing something. And one of my friends who's a member of Phi Beta Sigma in Huntsville started a program within his organization, and they partner with other Greeks in the community to basically go out into areas where there's less representation of us. There's less activity going on with major cities where there are groups focusing on STEM, and they bring the kids in on the weekends and they have activities and, you know, sleepovers and, you know, kind of girls night in is something that I've seen recently in a lot of different organizations where they bring the girls in and have them spend the night, see a movie about STEM, talk about it with folks who are STEM professionals, women who can inspire them and mm-hmm. teach them, you know, about self-confidence and how to gain that kind of appreciation for the topics and science and math.
The one thing I would say to Jesse, being in Quincy, Florida, you have a wonderful opportunity. The Florida A&M University is hosting STEM Day on April 6th in Tallahassee, Florida. So you can drive on up to STEM Day. It's awesome. For 8th through 12th graders. And the whole point is outreach to middle school, high school yes. students, trying to let them see themselves in the field. But there's a lot of programs that are focused on young women of color and people of color writ large, trying to get them indoctrinated into these fields. So one really wonderful program is Black Girls Code. They're a national program that's trying mm-hmm. to give young women of color technical coding skills. That's really the new language, right? When we were in school, we learned French, we learned Spanish. Young kids now are learning Python. They're learning R. They're learning C++, right? Because these are languages. If you become fluent, you can take that into any STEM field, right? You can go into aerospace engineering. You can go to Silicon Valley. You can become a nuclear engineer. So I definitely would recommend Black Girls Code. Additionally, these universities have programs that are targeting young people of color. One of them that's targeted towards high school students is called MIT MITES. They have them across the country, and they bring students from across the country to MIT for 9 weeks in high school to do graduate level research. You stay on MIT's campus, you take college courses. So there's a lot of these free opportunities for underrepresented communities to participate, and they're looking for this talent. They know that they have a problem in the field, so they're really trying to put resources behind investing in this initiative.
And Jesse, before I let you go, I would, as Dr. Snowden just suggested, put a plug in for where historically Black colleges and universities are right now. No shade against the University of Alabama, certainly, but Howard University, North Carolina A&T, Hampton, Morgan State, for example, my school.
FAMU.
Yeah, FAMU. absolutely. No shade there. historically Black colleges in America, they are really putting resources into their engineering schools. And there's also something called BEA, Black Engineer of the Year Awards, that happens every year here in the D.C. area, where, and I've been there attending some of the events. The reality is, if you do well in school, you go to these conferences, they're handing out jobs like a poker dealer is dealing cards. Something to think about. Going to take a break. When we come back, more conversation with these incredible Black women scientists. Jesse, thanks a lot. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our Women Wednesday conversation with Black women scientists. I want to talk to you about the broader culture, the culture outside of work, because in this job I meet a lot of really fascinating people, and I must say I'm extremely impressed with what I'm learning here. But I'm kind of different. I meet a lot of smart, incredible people every day. But for your average person, you meet a new person and you don't fit any stereotype as it relates to the jobs that you do. First of all, you are women. First of all, you are Black. You're not nerdy. You have your personality plus. But I would imagine for a lot of people, you just enter into conversations and then they say, "Oh, so what do you do?" And then their eyes just kind of glaze over. It's like, "You do what now?" How do you deal with that, Trish?
It's always funny to me because I actually used to do rocket science. So when people say, "What do you do?" I say rocket science, and they say, "BS.
What do you do, right?"
So I have to explain. And sometimes it's an entertaining conversation, but sometimes it's hard to convince folks if you're meeting them in a social setting. But anyway, it's challenging sometimes to talk to folks, because they may think you're lofty and you're smarter than they are. They may quickly feel like, "Oh, I can't have a conversation with you." But once they get to know me, people are I'm a down to earth gal. I like to talk about football. I like to watch a little college football myself, and I like to go to baseball games, and I'm into basketball as well, so I have other things to talk about.
She's mentioned nothing but sports here. I'm getting that, right.
But I'm also very active with my sorority, and I'm an artist as well. That's my passion, I guess you could say. My pastime, I do floral design. So I have a floral business and do weddings on the weekends sometimes, and events. And so I like to decorate. I could get into girly stuff too. So I get to meet a variety of people from all walks of life. And one of the great things about where I work is you get to have friendships with a lot of folks from different walks. And coming through engineering, from college, I've maintained a lot of relationships. You know, we had the National Society of Black Engineers, and even today, Greg Singleton, who's the guy who headed up the program for the engineering department, he's still there. He's still bringing in black students and encouraging them. And we keep in touch on Facebook, and his wife just got a PhD. So we keep in touch. We talk about all the things that are going on. So it's always amazing to hear what's going on in everybody else's life. I have a lot of friends who are in education, so I get to hear about all the things they're doing. And I get invited to their schools a lot to talk to kids about, mm-hmm. you know, about the field and the things that I do. So it becomes a little more common for me to share what I do with folks, because I like to bring people in, you know, with my personality, I guess.
Oh,
but,
yes.
but I also like to encourage them that it's not so unique. It's a unique field to be in, but it's not so hard to get into this field if you just work hard and study. So I like to encourage folks who have kids who are interested to, you know, talk to me, and I like to encourage kids to really consider science.
Yeah, I mean, and same for you, Dr. Snowden. What do you talk about at the family picnic? Nuclear proliferation. You see this hot dog?
Right.
This is what an ICBM looks like.
Okay. You know, my father has probably used that exact example. No, it's so interesting because my dad, he went to Morehouse College for undergraduate, got his BA in political science, and graduated from Howard Law after that. And, you know, we never really had I didn't feel like I had much to offer the political science discussion until kind of now, right? My work is the intersection of technology and policy as it relates to nuclear weapons, right? So my father, you know, he texts me right now, talk about Nagasaki, you know, so he has...
we'll have to bring you in, Dad.
Right. So he has all kinds of suggestions. But, you know, the good thing about my field, or I guess good and bad, depending on how you frame it, you know, it's a very active time in nuclear security right now. There's a lot of things that are happening. So we had Iran, we had the North Korean, we have Russia, China. So it's already in people's psyche, you know?
Yeah,
so
it's front and center,
You know, and my father also has a saying, like, if you can't explain it, you don't understand it. So this idea, I think sometimes technical people intentionally speak in very opaque and confusing terms, almost as a defense mechanism, right? You don't want people to probe deeper, so you use these big flowery words that intentionally confuse people. I don't think that's the right kind of brand for science, right? Science needs to be accessible. It needs to be easily digested. Yeah. So for me, it's exciting to have just a plain conversation about the technology or about the political issue that intersects with the technology.
But what I'm asking is, do you ever put it down at happy hour when you're sitting around with the girls? Because, you know, because like Trish just said, she talked about, you know, football and art and the like. And is it difficult to put it down sometimes?
No. I mean, I've been blessed with really sharp girlfriends. You know, they are all killing it in their own field, and you know, they get it. And you know, we talk about a range of things from, you know, love and hip hop to North Korea. So
I knew before this conversation ended.
Real Housewives.
There was going to be a ratchet television conversation.
You know, I mean, everybody needs a brain break, right?
Yes,
you can't
be
on all the time. So, you know, I think just being a whole person and your whole self, I think we definitely have kind of a stereotype about what it means to be an analytical scientist, engineer. But we like to go and shop and, you know, play sports and hang out with the family just like the rest of the citizenry. So, I mean, I think we talk about a lot of different things. My girlfriends will often text me when something pops off with North Korea or Russia and say, are we good? Like, is everything, like,
right.
Should we be worried? And that's kind of an entry point into the conversation. But, you know, we trade articles all the time about their work and my work.
Or I guess when you text back and say, brush up on your North Korean, and then there's time to be...
Right, get under the table.
Right, exactly. Yeah, duck and cover.
Right.
And that is very real.
That's actually not funny. I'm sorry to laugh at that.
And no, but I mean, that is a realistic thing, and... Mm-hmm. And I don't think that either of you are highbrow, and I think that anyone in this community would be blessed to have you as friends or acquaintances to explain the kinds of things that are going on outside of our own cultural circle. Because the reality is, you know, there was, you know, a Dr. Snowden and a, you know, and a Trishonda Moten before the Hidden Figures movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we need to salute, you know, both of you and the work that you are doing. It's incredible. I appreciate you. Glad to see that you are, you know, in our community. Please continue to inspire not only young girls but young boys in our community as a whole.
Yeah, I just have a quick two-finger on that, Harold, because, you know, one of the wonderful things I think about the movie Hidden Figures is it shows us there's so much archaeological work we need to do in science and engineering around who was actually at the table.
Oh, yes.
We have this narrative as if we've never been there. We have always been at these tables. The problem is that whether for laziness or intentionality, we've been overlooked, right?
Yes.
And you look at a movie like Hidden Figures that grossed over $200 million worldwide in the box office. Box office hit. People are hungry for these narratives. So the women are there. The black people are there. We just have to take time to kind of dust off the sand and see them.
And encourage them to speak up, because so many of these people are very humble about the work that they've done, and we need to continue to hear them.
Like she's saying, Ms. Katherine Johnson.
Come on now.
You know, I know a woman who knew her, and she said she never knew what she did.
Yeah.
She says all she said was, "I just did my job every day," and that's what she says now. Amazingly, she's still living at 100 years old, and
that?
We share a birthday, so August 26th.
I guess we'll have to remember.
But it's just
that.
Amazing that, you know, they were just doing their jobs.
I want to thank both of you, Dr. Marina Robinson Snowden and Trishonda Moten. Thank you both so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, March 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.